In 2021, Talk About It Outdoors partnered with an industry-leading brand that has stamped its name on the outdoor industry. Cruiser Saddles, in itself, stands on perfection. And with every climb we make, we elevate ourselves above the rest. In addition to a support to our hunting journey, the men and women behind Cruiser believe in the same principles of life as us. Faith, family, and the blessings of being better as they go in every sit. If your desire to pursue your passions one step ahead of the rest, go ahead and get in the best. Check them out on all the socials or head over to their website at www.cruiser.com. That's CRUZR.com. And tell them to Talk About It Outdoors boys and Chasing Weekends sent you their way. The journey of life has a unique way of being able to create tried and true friendships as we go. In forming those relationships, oftentimes, good things come to follow. Talk About It Outdoors is proudly supported by Cal Hardy, the Barrelhead Land Company. Cal is the leading broker over Georgia and is happy to assist you with finding the place where you can call home. With vast knowledge and an understanding of the ever-evolving real estate market and a unique old-school approach to everything he does, he exemplifies what it means to treat others like you'd want to be treated. Don't settle for being just another number in a phone. Choose Cal Hardy for all your land, home, and commercial real estate needs and become a part of his family. We sure are blessed to have him as a part of ours. Find him on Facebook, Instagram, or give him a call at 770-296-2163. Step back to the times when a feed store was more than just that, and the people inside smiled with friendly faces and provided a place for a talk on life, as well as all your essential farm, livestock, and pet needs. Cherokee Feed and Seed, located in Ball Ground, Georgia, with an additional location in Gainesville, are the hometown supplier of all your cattle, equine, and pet needs, with the added addition of being able to keep your deer herd healthy with protein and minerals. They also carry an assortment of hunting blinds and gear, and you can rest easy knowing the people that support local ball clubs and children's sports are who your hard-earned money is going to. The people here greet you with a handshake and a smile, and Cherokee Feed and Seed give more than just a product. They give you a welcome that'll make you return time and time again. Stop in next time you're in the area and tell them you're part of the Talk About It Outdoors family. A few years back, when an overbearing and overgrown backyard became an eyesore, I looked for a solution to resolve. LRS Land Services created a stunning and complete transformation turnkey at an affordable price with their mulching services. Not limited to mulching, LRS can provide turnkey grading and clearing, maintenance, right-of-way clearing, and even development for any and all forestry needs. With an innovative outlook on what is best for your land and a completely different approach than others, LRS can transform your overgrown eyesore into a beautiful landscape of your dreams. Give them a call at 404-889-1105 or check their work out on Facebook at LRS Land Services. Logan and his team are ready to make your land brand new again. Building the foundation of your life starts at the base, and the stronger it is, the better. Talk About It Outdoors is proud of our strong partnership with United Concrete and Paving and the foundation of support they provide. Whether your new home being built needs concrete work or that driveway you're tired of beating all the bearings from your pickup needs a paving, Michael and his team can provide any residential or commercial project support you might need from the ground up. If you're tired of tripping over that unsettled patio slab or a future shop build needs a smooth start, United Concrete and Paving can get you going when you need it most. Give them a call at 404-831-3036 and make sure you tell them them TAI boys are where you heard it first.
Ready, Nick?
Let's do it.
All All right, everybody, Talk About It Outdoors coming to you live from the Cruiser Saddle Studio. Man, it's episode 200, and we've got an old familiar face back in studio with us tonight. Nicholas Wilson, Alex DeBoer, Cody Watson, and legendary Braves Hall of Famer Chipper Jones is here. Cut it up and talk about what's happening nowadays. Y'all pull up a chair and sit a while. This is going to be a good one. Nick, 200, baby. What is going on?
Man, people have been texting me left and right. When y'all dropping 200? Who's it going to be? I said, just wait. It'll be out Monday.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I can tell you one thing. From episode 100 to 200, April 22nd is when we dropped the last one with Mr. Jones. And it is a pleasure to have you back, Chipper. We thank you for coming and being with us again.
Thank y'all for having me. I enjoy talking the great outdoors with y'all. And a little bit of baseball as well.
Well, it's a little bit different scene than we had last time. Yeah. We were working on the studio, trying to get it put together when we had you on. And that's been over a year and a half ago. And through the last year and a half, we've had some amazing episodes with friends and family from local. We've had guys from all over the country on. And one thing that always goes back when you talk about it outdoors is that you came and did our 100th episode. And on that episode, we asked, would you come back and do 200 with us? And I'd text you, and you're like, yeah, man, whenever, let's do it. So,
well, I'm very impressed with your new studio. And from the size of some of these deer mouse in here, I should be hunting with you guys.
That'd be Alex only.
luck be the favor of sometimes, but it's definitely not been this year.
Better be lucky than good.
Any day. Being in the right place at the right time is something we've talked about a lot in the past. And I think that's one of those things that's been beneficial for us all, is being in the right place. And us meeting people at trade shows and things like that, it's always been something that's put us in the right place in the right time to make relationships and build on those. And I'm sure you can attest to that through the years, being in those conversations with people in the right places is all about the chance meetings.
100%. Networking is everything in this industry, you know, and you know, I started out my hunting career, you know, in little old Central Florida. Had no idea, you know, my standing with the Atlanta Braves kind of opened some doors, but the first door was Realtree Outdoors. Yeah. And I mean, when you talk about networking, like if you have the Godfather in your corner, you know, Bill Jordan, that'll open a lot of doors. So kudos and thank you to Bill and Tyler Jordan down there at Realtree Outdoors for allowing me to be in the industry for a very long time. You know, as you all know, getting started with kind of the Buck Commander thing and then graduating to Major League Bow Hunter and now being a part-time co-host with Realtree Outdoors. I mean, it doesn't get much better now. We've come full circle and, you know, 25, 30 years in the industry.
It is funny to see you come back full circle from the days when we were kids watching you walk out in an old Realtree jacket with a hood on. I think you may have been in Texas with a rifle, and you were probably, what was that, in the early 90s, 93, 94?
It was probably mid-90s. Okay. I think the first Monster Bucks hunt I went on was with Jeff Foxworthy at the Perlitz Ranch in South Texas. And I'll never forget it because it started an annual thing with me and my father where, you know, we would, once we hunted in South Texas the first time, fell in love with it, you know, and we went back every single year and eventually ended up buying the Double Dime Ranch and having that place for 16 years. And man, I sold it in 2016, and there is not a day that goes by that I do not miss that place. I don't miss taking care of it.
Right,
you know,
right.
10,000 acres, there's something going wrong, going amiss pretty much every day. And certainly being 8 miles from the Mexican border, that has its trials and tribulations as well, especially now. So everything happens for a reason, but man, we had some good times down there.
Well, for us, it's been cool to see the transition from where you were to where you are now. And one of the things that we've taken from that is the people you've been able to bring into the industry and bring along with you. You know, we made mention of Colin earlier, and he started filming with Major League Bow Hunter. And I don't know what he's doing now as far as the film side of things, but taking and mentoring those young guys has been something you've done throughout your baseball career, of course, and you're still doing it now with the Braves. And then going into the outdoor industry space has been something that's it's awful neat to see. And there's probably been more of those relationships built behind the scenes than we'll ever even know.
100%. You know, I mean, there have been a handful of, you know, those young camera guys that, you know, started out modestly enough, much like a Michael Waddell. You know, I mean, that first hunt at the Perlitz Ranch, the first Monster Bucks hunt, Michael Waddell was the camera guy for Jeff Foxworthy. You know, I mean, and now he's one of the, if not the biggest personality in the outdoor industry. He's just extremely charismatic on camera. People relate to him. He stays true to himself, and I think people appreciate that. And, you know, you knew getting to know him behind the scenes back in the day that he was going to be a he wasn't just going to be relegated to right. behind the camera. At some point, he was going to be in front of the camera. And, you know, I mean, Colin, he's my camera guy with Major League Bowhunter. He's so meek and unassuming. And, you know, I don't know how he's going to do in front of the camera. But, you know, I got a chance to watch him out at Triple Creek Outfitters in Kansas this year. And he looks pretty good on camera. And he, you know, he does a good job, and he continues to help produce some of the shows for Major League Bowhunter. And we're lucky to have him because he's a really smart kid.
You imagine sitting in the tree with Waddell and Foxworthy?
Golly.
You wouldn't see anything. You just laugh the whole time. That would be a
It was a deer camp was a lot of fun that week. I can promise you that.
Yeah, you told some stories about that camp last time about Foxworthy and stuff. So
Well, we had Michael Waddell on in the 190s was
184.
So and for a guy that, you know, it's almost surreal to us as, you know, just backwoods good old boys. This is where we grew up. You're at our home now. I mean, you're up in the place where we've, you know, cut our teeth on everything we did. And I remember Nick and I sitting here that night. Was you here for Waddell? Yeah. So we were sitting here and just kind of hearing his voice on the phone. You've watched him on TV. It goes back to just when we had you on to be able to sit in the same room with you. It was almost an unattainable goal, but we kind of set ourselves in the beginning like there's nothing that we're going to try to not chase. You know, we're going to try to talk to whoever we can. And those conversations have just blossomed into so much more. I mean, we never would have dreamed that Michael would tell some of the stories that he told us. He literally told us after the show, he's like, boys, I've never told some of that stuff. I might get in trouble for telling some of it, but being able to relate to people and see what they do and see who they are has always been pretty special to us. And, you know, like you said earlier, going back to the Texas days, do you still hunt Texas at all, or do you just kind of stay out of there?
I haven't been back to Texas since 2016. Okay. I'm probably going to go back at some point just because I know a ton of people down there. My kids are starting to get into bow hunting. Mm-hmm. I got an 18 and 19 year old that are just eat up with it. You know, my younger ones will continue to get into it. My wife is a bow hunter, and the more controlled the environment, the better I feel. You know, I don't want my wife climbing 20 foot up a tree. I don't care if she's on a lifeline or not.
Right.
You know, I just don't want to put her in that. I'd much rather have her in a ground blind. She feels more comfortable there. She cut her teeth bow hunting out of ground blinds in Texas. And we often talk about, you know, missing the sunsets and, you know, missing that spot out in front of my mom and dad's house where you got, you know, a 7 or 8 acre pond where, you know, 400 or 500 ducks come into light every night. And, you know, we're sitting under the flagpole where my granddaddy's ashes, you know, were buried. And you got the ducks on one side, and you got a 60-acre green field on the other side where there's, you know, 50 head of whitetails out there. It's just, you take a six-pack of beer out there and you wait until it gets black-ass dark, you know? So yeah. It's just one of those things that we missed. And I'd love to be able to take her back and see if we can't get her one with her bow.
Do you think you'll retire to Texas, ever go back to it, or are you going to stay here in Georgia?
I don't think so. I'm a Georgia boy. You know, even though I'm from Florida, I feel like I'm a Georgia boy. I've lived here since 1992, so that's 30 plus years. So I've been here more than half of my life. I don't know if I can quite root for the Bulldogs yet, but I mean, we'll talk about that later. Coach Kirby's been trying to get me to switch sides, you know, for quite some time. This is my home. My wife's from here. My kids are rooted here, and I would never dream of uprooting them.
I like it. Nick, I know you're dying over there, chomping at the bits. You ain't going to be able to talk turkey hunting. We expelled that on the last one. Chipper's not much of a turkey hunter, but won't you hit him with some baseball stuff? I know you got 1,000 baseball questions going through your mind, or are you just going to sit there and smile the whole time? I don't know.
What happened to our Braves this year, man? They just got cold, didn't they?
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's like I say all the time. It's not necessarily who the best team is. You know, the best team very seldom wins the championship. It's all about who gets hot at the right time. And to be honest with you, the way the Phillies were playing us, you know, in the division series, it looked as though they were cocked and primed to get over the hump this year. Unfortunately for them, there were about there were at least two other teams that were hotter than they were. You know, it's unfortunate. You know, you can, as a baseball player, you can never control when you're 15 for your last 20. You can never control when you're 0 for your last 20. And unfortunately, you know, with you know, Charlie Morton not being able to throw in the postseason, Elder was a little gimpy there at the end, and we had to throw him in game 3. That combined with the fact that, you know, we didn't hit, you know, we didn't hit like we normally do.
That's right.
And, you know, you have to credit a guy named Wheeler and a guy named Nola and some of those guys in that bullpen, Ranger Suarez. I mean, that's a very, very good team up there. We've done one big thing here in the last week or 10 days that will help us address, some of those issues in October, you know, again, especially against the Phillies going forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that move too. I think it's going to be good. I hate losing Grissom, but I think it's a good move.
Well, Chris Sale, I can promise you this right now, whenever, Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber and Bryson Stott and the fellas up there in Philly woke up and saw that we got Chris Sale, they were like, yeah. I don't want to face him, you know. I mean, because that's 6'10", you know, sidearm lefty, you know, throwing from the first base dugout, and that's a very uncomfortable feeling for some of those lefties. Ooh, so
yeah,
this was don't get me wrong, it's a April through September type of pickup, but this move in particular was made for October to combat the Harpers, the Schwarbers, the Otanis, the Freemans,
right,
you know, later on down the road. Yeah. Like we're thinking more big picture than we are recent times.
Putting yourself in all those positions where you get in those slumps, or you know you go in as the hottest team in baseball throughout the series and you lose, do you sometimes relate that back to deer hunting or anything else that you do in life? Like, there's going to be ups and downs, and how do you get back over it?
100%. I think it can be relatable. You know, you could point at this late October and early November in the Midwest.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're hardwired to come in, if you will, at the same time every year. Okay, so if they come in, there's going to be activity, okay? Now, whether or not you see that activity is a completely different conversation, but the fact of the matter is if we wait for November 1st to go to Iowa or Kansas and we get to said state and it's 74 degrees,
yeah,
and the wind's blowing 35 miles an hour, guess what? You're not going to see a whole heck of a lot of movement, and the rut is going to, you know, the rut is going to trickle. Man, it just seemed like this year, you know, we live for the end of October. We live for Halloween. We live for the 1st of November, especially in the Midwest, because that's when we know it's going on. But when we get there, we can't control the fact that it's 74 degrees. Will we love to have it be 32 degrees and wind blowing 4 or 5 miles an hour? And, you know, we can predict pretty much everything that's going to happen. Of course.
Right.
But that's not the way it works. And a lot of that's the same thing in baseball. If we get to October 1st, I'd love to be, you know, hitting 450 in my last 20 games. But guess what? More times than not, I'm not.
Right.
So, yeah. And the fact of the matter is you are facing the best of the best at that point of the season. And if you're not on top of your game, they're going to get the best of you.
Do you have a certain routine that you can recall that you do, whether you were in pressure at the plate or pressure in the stand? Is there something that you kind of mentally do or say to yourself, anything that helps you?
Don't mess it up. Don't mess it up. That's me.
I never had that mindset. And I probably used this analogy the last time I was in here. If you have a math test tomorrow in school, or a social studies test, and it's over the last three chapters, and you've gone over those last three chapters with a fine-tooth comb, you could almost recite them. You know them word for word. You know, walking in to that test, I got this. I'm as prepared as I can possibly be. On the flip side, if you crammed like the last 10 or 15 minutes before the test and you walk in there, you're like, I don't know about this. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, so I tried to be the most prepared I could be for each and every matchup going into each and every game, each and every series. And pressure, no. A little nervousness because it is the playoffs. And you realize all the eyes that are on you, like everything that you do is going to be under a microscope. Maybe a little anxiousness, but if I'm prepared, a lot of that goes away.
Yeah.
Yeah. The old saying, fail to prepare, prepare to fail.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, and we talked last time about when you see that deer, you got to make a commitment. I'm going to kill that deer. And we've talked about that a bunch. Yeah. You got to put it in your head. I'm going to kill you. It might not happen today, yeah, but I'm going to kill you.
Execution is everything. You know, I mean, that deer, you might only get one or two opportunities out during the course of the fall and the winter. And, you know, just like in baseball, you might only get that one. You might only get one opportunity in a game to directly affect the outcome of that game. Your at bat might be the most important at bat, but it might be bases loaded, two outs in the bottom of the sixth or bottom of the seventh, not necessarily the bottom of the ninth. So you have to be prepared and ready to execute. It doesn't matter if it's 7 o'clock in the morning or 10:30 in the morning or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, if you're sitting all day or 6 o'clock right before dark. You know, it's hard to stay focused that long all day, every day. But I guess when you're going after some of the big animals that we're going after, it makes it a little easier to stay focused.
Yeah.
This is a two-part question, but as far as a mentorship, when these young guys come into the organization, do they look to you for advice on hitting? And do some of those same guys look to your advice on maybe getting in the outdoors and hunting?
You got to know the room. I guess if Austin Riley's in the batting cage, we talk more hunting than we do.
Oh, really?
Hit. Right. You know, I mean.
Does he seek advice, though? Does he say?
100%.
He's asking
yes.
you?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like he's pretty young in his bow hunting career. Mm-hmm. Like he hasn't done a ton of it because – when he gets the opportunity to go hunting, he's thinking more, I'd like to go kill something,
yeah,
you know, as opposed to going and putting in a week, 10 days, 2 weeks at a time to bow hunt something,
yeah,
you know? So he's basically looking, okay, I got this one opportunity. I got, you know, new dad, you know, I mean, he's got like 3 or 4 days that he can go. And, you know, I'm sure Tyler and Realtree Road Trip's trying to get him a kill as quickly as possible for content, because let's face it, he's a draw. Like, yeah, he is the face of Braves country right now, you mm-hmm. know, and much like myself back in the day, people can relate to us because we are from the South,
mm-hmm.
and we are good old boys, and we love, you know, duck hunting and dove hunting, turkey hunting, deer hunting,
yep.
fishing, you know, all those things. Everybody in Braves country likes us for, you
yeah.
know? And so, yes, when it comes to the bow side of things, he's full of questions. He's a lot more confident in his ability to swing the bat than he is, you know, with a bow in his hand right now.
Does he like you giving him advice in the batting cage, or do you just go ahead and offer it up?
I very rarely say anything.
Really?
You know, I think that's what good hitting coaches do. They know when to offer advice and when to shut the hell up.
Gotcha.
You know? And my dad was always of the belief that if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, these guys, especially the starters, know exactly what they're doing. They have their routines. When they get a little out of whack, you can see their minds on spin cycle.
Yeah.
Okay. They're spinning a little bit.
Yeah.
So at that point, that's when you say, hey, let's take a step back. You know, I mean, I see you kind of leaking with your front side. And what I always tell them, I'm like, drive that ball through the State Farm sign. There's a big State Farm sign in right center field, right over top of our bullpen. And if we keep him centered right there to that State Farm sign, he's usually on it. He's usually really good. When he starts to leak to his front side and start to pull to the pull gap, that's when you see him swing and miss. It's when you see his walks go down, average go down. So I just got a couple of little sayings with each of the guys to help keep them centered where they're supposed to be.
Yeah. Is there any new guys, new team members coming up that you're kind of mentoring in the outdoors?
Well, I got a new camera guy this year. His name is Jake Foy. He's been with Duff for the last couple of years with Major League Bow Hunter. But we'll address the elephant in the room right now, I guess, with my departure from Major League Bow Hunter in May. And Jake kind of came with me. He's a lot like Colin in his inexperience, maybe being in the field, mm-hmm. but he's a deer hunter. He's been a deer hunter. He's from Illinois. I mean, he's been in it. He's been around it. Not to mention the fact he's about 6'3", 240, you know, so the two of us in a tree make that tree kind of sag a little bit. Awesome kid, real quiet, very good photographer on the side. So knows his way around a camera, and you know, he's got enough experience in the Midwest where I don't mind bouncing ideas off him. That was the big thing that I miss with Brandon Danker. You know, B Dank and I are together and we're on a big deer and we're bouncing ideas off and we're making mistakes and we're making headway and all this kind of, we're going to kill that deer. We're going to get him on the ground. Jake and I aren't quite there yet, we're killing deer. We're just not getting in the back pocket of the big ones quite yet.
Jake, for anyone who doesn't know, he filmed with David Blanton this year.
Yes.
And in those pictures that he took of David, will probably go down as some of, and I thought that's who that was. I had to look it up, but those will go down as some of the best pictures I've ever seen of David at the part in he's at in his career with how many times he's had his picture taken and seeing how he was able to capture those moments with him. It was pretty neat to see.
Very, very accomplished photographer. He's just as good behind the action camera, but yeah, if you guys get a chance to follow him on Instagram,
yep.
you will see almost daily some of the good work that he does. And he's got some big deer up there in Illinois. I know one deer that was easily a booner, probably closer to 180. They found a deadhead this year, and another neighbor shot their other target buck. So, yeah, I mean, it's I love seeing these guys have their own thing, you know, whenever they're away from me, because it just gives them more experience and more to draw from when we get in the tree together.
And you talk about learning from each other. I'm sure at your point in your career, you're learning as much about the camera side of things still, because, hell, we all know cameras change like every single week, it seems like, and the equipment that guys got now. I mean, it seems like we're always behind the eight ball on that. But
I have a theory on that, okay? So if you – it's almost like when the wife asks you to put the dishes in the dishwasher and you deliberately do it wrong so that she's got to come behind you and do it behind you. You don't have to do it anymore, but she'll just say, never mind, you're just going to do it wrong. I kind of have that theory with the camera setups, you know, like Duff and B Dank have asked me to film for them, and I'm like, man, I'm all thumbs back here. I don't know what what's going on, you know, with the iris and the gain and all this kind of stuff. And they're like, never mind.
Never ask
just
again.
Don't worry about it. I'm like, yes. I get to stay in front of the camera.
Oh, well, that's for us. We do a lot of self-filming. You know, we're all filming ourselves. And it seems like every time I come back, I'm looking up, how do I change this or how do I do that? And I'm like, shit, I wish I'd have known that when that was going on, because now I don't get that opportunity again. Yeah. So.
Have you ever had a cameraman in your career ruin a hunt? Not in the sense of like, don't take the shot, I don't have the deer in frame, but, and I ask this for a reason, if the camera has ever ruined a hunt or made you...
Ruined a kill? No, I have not. But we've had many instances where, you know, we've had a target buck. Maybe we got him at 100 yards, you know, or a big deer at 100 yards, never really quite came in, and somebody forgot to press the record button, or the card didn't record it or whatever. I will say this, the closest we ever came, and you'll love my reaction to this, by the way, it was the very first hunt that B-Dank and I were ever on together. It was for Major League Bow Hunter, and it was in Alberta, Canada. Okay. And we're hunting this probably 100-acre, it's like a barley field or something. And there's this deer, you know, that's been seen. We called him Turbo. He would hit the field on the far side, and I mean, beeline it across the field straight to where we had this set. Right. So the very first morning, it's early season, it's September, velvet falling off. So there's a lot of red antlers and, you know, whatnot. So you can see him coming from a mile away. The barley fields are only like foot and a half, 2 foot high. So, I mean, you could see every deer out there. And sure enough, here he comes. And he gets about halfway across the field, and B-Dank goes, yeah. I go, what? He goes, camera's not recording. And I go, well, you got about 20 seconds to fix it. This is our first hunt. Like he's nervous already. All right. I turn around. I go, well, you better fix it now. Right. So he's like, I don't know what's going on. Da, 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 da. And I was like, so now Turbo is literally 40 yards.
Oh.
And I go, I'm locked on. I'm ready to go. And about ready to pull back, I was like, you got him? He goes, Chip, I don't have him. And I turn to him and I go, tough shit. And I draw back. And luckily, the deer was coming straight to us and, you know, had no shot. And he ends up hooking a tree, okay, a little sapling or something. And as he's thrashing this sapling around, it bends over and comes back and smacks him right in the forehead. And he wigged out and took off, right? And B-Dank looks at me, and he's literally sweating. Right? And I look at him, and I go, how fun was that? And he's just like, I'm stressed to the gills. I don't know what's going on. Turns out we got everything on camera.
Oh, God.
We got everything. It was just one of those instances where he wasn't really comfortable with the setup, with the camera setup, and he filmed everything. So it all would have turned out. Oh, man. And we never got on that deer again. So, but yeah, that was the closest we ever came.
Wow.
Nick had opportunity at a deer in Illinois this year, and it was kind of a offside shot. He kind of was in a weird angle, and he had the camera down here kind of, you know, beside him. And when he drew back, long story short, the fold-out viewing lens on the camera was in between where his draw cycle was and shot.
Oh, my.
Blew his camera apart.
I was going to say. Blew
my camera apart, yeah. Oh,
blew your bow up, too.
Blew my bow up.
Oh, no.
De-limbed it. Yeah. I had one more day to hunt.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a major faux pas right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was saddle hunting, so the camera was between me and the tree, and I had it over here, and when I pulled back, I had to let the bow go. I actually went back, and it filmed the whole thing, even when it smashed the side view, but I ended up holding the bow back for 2.5 minutes. Oh, wow. And I had to let it go. You can see my hand like shaking. And when I did, it just complete disaster. But I guess
that's why I was asking if a camera's ever ruined a hunt or like had a situation like that. Because I mean,
the only time we've had camera malfunction has been when it's so cold.
Yeah.
When it's single digits and, you know,
they just will not work.
Screen gels up and stuff like that. Yeah. But I mean, that's just part of bow hunting.
Yeah.
Well, batteries too. I mean, they go psycho and just trip out, and they're dead as a doornail. But you called me that morning. I'll never forget. I was so excited.
You called me out.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, you get him.
I FaceTimed him.
He's like, no, stop.
Yeah, don't get excited.
This is not that kind of phone call. It's like, oh, no.
Jipper, do you ever wish you could just get out and do some, I don't know, just some private lease hunting around here, some public land hunting, or – now that Seek One's involved in Realtree, does that spark your interest in knocking on some doors?
I think I am definitely interested.
Yeah.
Definitely interested because I live in a really good spot. You know, I mean, there's some good deer right there around where I live. You know, they're in Canton and Milton, some of these suburbs. I mean, there's some big deer. I got a picture of a deer 50 yards out my back door that's, you know, probably a high 40s, low 50s, 8 point, you know? I don't know if he made it through. I got a picture from somebody the other day of a pretty nice 9 point. I couldn't really tell about his 4 on his left side, but yeah, I mean, there's some good deer, but I mean, like, I can't imagine walking up to somebody's house and knocking on the door and saying, "Hi, ma'am. My name is Chipper Jones, and you know, I was wondering if you had a deer problem back here I could help you with. You know, I mean,
I was
let me call my husband."
But they'd be like wanting to call her, "Hey, get up here. Chipper Jones is here.
Yeah. He wants a deer hunt back here." Like,
what, Chipper Jones? Yeah, it would be a little awkward. I'm not much of a salesman to begin with.
Yeah.
Now I have a couple of neighbors that you know, I'm cool with, that I could probably go up and say, "Hey, you know, you mind if I throw a setup, you know, back in the brush behind your place?" And they'd be okay with it.
I was about to say,
yeah, but I don't know.
I love knocking on doors. So if you just want to ride and just walk up to, I do a lot of that. So
well, see, one of my best buddies is a landscaper. What better job?
Oh, yeah.
To have,
yep.
To be able to access little old ladies' gardens, you know, or you know, like he's had a bunch of success this year behind an elementary school, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got some great picks and some great deer behind an elementary school there locally. So it's, Yeah, I think if I had that direct in where I was a landscaper and I was constantly intermingling with these homeowners and landowners and whatnot, it would be different. But like, I was on TV in these people's houses for 20 years.
That's what I'm saying. You probably could get a lot of permission.
Yeah, you probably could. Yeah,
I probably could. Yeah. But I don't know how much, you know, between my obsession with Kansas and Iowa, and I will probably branch out into Indiana and Illinois this upcoming year. Maybe not as much in Kansas and Iowa anymore because, you know, you have to get drawn in those states, and let's face it, you're not going to get drawn every year. So I think it's better to put some time in some of those states where you can be guaranteed a tag over the counter every single year, you know? And man, I haven't seen some of the deer that Jake Foy has there in Illinois, and I've made some inroads with some people up in Indiana. I mean, it's the same place.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same deer. You know, it's just, you know, in a different state. And people think Iowa and Kansas and the hair on the back of their neck stands up. They think, you know, Illinois is probably like that too. But they think Indiana's a tremendous sleeper state. You know?
100%.
You're seeing big deer fall in Ohio. Another one that's, you know, over the counter. So I'd much rather guarantee myself those spots every year as opposed to waiting on the draw.
Did you watch that? Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say a lot of these deer are Illinois public land. So, I mean, you know, they're there for sure.
Did you watch that episode that Lee killed that deer in Ohio, Lee Ellis?
I have not watched it.
Oh, man. No.
That was no way I could hunt the places that he goes. I mean, he's sitting there watching people do drugs and they're walking by him doing dope right there in the middle of the woods where he's trying to hunt. And to me, that's great. You're going in there to kill that deer, and then he's probably one of the best in the country at doing it, if not the best. I mean, hands down, probably.
When he gets his sight set on a deer, that deer's going to die.
Yep. I mean, and for him to do those things, for me, I guess I'm in a different direction when it goes to hunting. I want to get out away from everything. You know, my backyard right here, like you said, sitting here, there's probably great deer walking around, but it's my backyard. I want to go to the chase these other states, and it's almost adventure as much as it is killing.
Yeah. Well, and I'm going to throw some serious love at Lee Ellis right now because, you know, I've always said that the best compliment I can give a hunter is when they get their sights set on a specific animal, they're going to kill it. And only the best ones can do it year in and year out.
Yep.
And I've always said that the three best hunters that I've ever hunted with, as much as I hate to say it, Jeff Danker's one of them. When he gets his mind set on a deer, that deer's going to die.
Yeah.
Adam LaRoche, tremendous hunter. Probably the best of the bunch as far as the Midwest goes because he's very patient. He reads the signs. There's no ifs. There's no iffies. There's no iffy wins. There's like he is meticulous. And Michael Waddell, you know, those are the three best hunters that I've ever hunted with. And Lee Ellis is slowly coming into the conversation, you know.
Well, and we've talked to Lee, you know, a couple of times, and we're gonna try to do a show with him.
Right.
Being from Georgia, I mean, he's told us he just got to keep finding his time. And but the thing about it is consistency, like you said. I mean, he's one of those, I don't know the baseball acronym to compare it to, but he's a guy that can consistently be in the game every single time he goes anywhere.
Well, he had a bunch of haters early on because everybody was like, "Oh, downtown Atlanta, that's so easy." Then when he started traveling these other states and doing it, where he has
he's not putting in the time in those other states like he does here. You know, I mean, when he gets his mind set on one, he's going to get him.
Yep.
You know, and I just think I think it's cool, man.
I love their content.
I would love to have some of the opportunities he has, but those guys, you know, to be able to number one hear about a deer outside of Nashville or outside of
Cincinnati or wherever,
Ohio, whatever, to be able to go up and do the scouting necessary. Not only the scouting, but what about the setups, man?
Yeah.
I mean, like you gotta, it's just, it's mind boggling to me how high their success rate is. It's really, really cool to watch.
He goes and looks at video he got sent, finds the billboard of that deer in the background, finds the billboard, gets on Google Earth and searches around and finally finds that billboard and then starts getting permission around there to try to track the deer down. I mean, who goes to those depths to, you know, kill a deer?
A really insane deer hunter.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, I don't know at 51 years old if I'm willing to put that much time and effort into it.
Yeah, a non-married deer hunter.
Yeah, yeah. Non-married deer hunter. Yeah. Yeah,
that's a good one. Yeah. A non-fathered.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. No kids, no wife. Yes, yes, that's exactly right.
Me and Nick talked about that, how much time he spent just driving back and forth.
And that's probably why he's the smartest deer hunter. Yeah. Yeah.
He's definitely got something figured out there. Let's go back to baseball for just a second, because I know a longtime friend of yours just recently took a job outside of the Braves in Ron Washington and leaving. Do you think that's going to hinder the club, or is it going to, you know, is it good for him, and is it going to hinder the club going forward?
It's great for him, and it's awful for us. You know, I mean, Wash is one of the hardest working coaches you're ever going to have. He takes great pride in the ability to have accessibility, to be accessible. You know, I mean, these guys know that he's going to be there at noon every day. They're going to go through their routines. They want to be the best infield in the game of baseball. It's a lot of fun to watch them go through their rigors every single day. And Wash pulls no punches. He's going to be in your rear end from the time you get there to the time you're done with your drills. And that kind of in your face consistency is good for young ball players still learning, still trying to figure out their routines and whatnot. So it's a big loss for us. It's a big loss for the coaching staff because, you know, I think we have one of the best coaching staffs in the game, most consistent. Guys are, you know, in those guys' ears every day. And not having him, not having Eric Young over there at first base, it's a big deal when you lose a base coach. When you lose both of them, it's doubly bad because EY was one of the best base dealers I've ever played against and very good at reading pitchers. So when he would pick up stuff, watching film on pitchers, whether it was, okay, they're setting high, they're setting low. If you see the left knee collapse, he's going home. If it straightens out, he's coming to first, you know, just little things like that, that can give Ronald Acuña Jr. another half step. Right. You know, or Ozzy Albies another half step. So all those things are very invaluable. The two guys that are coming in are very good. Tuiasa Sopo at third, he was our AAA manager last year too. He's a great guy. All the guys love him. Whenever Wash has missed some time, Tui's gotten called up. So he'll fit right in. And then bringing in Tom Goodwin at first base, played against him a lot with the Dodgers. Another very good base dealer. He's been around a long, long time, and hopefully will step into EY's shoes, you know, seamlessly.
Do you ever wish you could have changed your walkout song?
No.
No? No.
I thought it was the coolest song from the first time I ever heard it. So we were in Montreal, and Larry Walker walked up to Crazy Train at Olympic Stadium. And Olympic Stadium, you could put 100,000 people in. Now, there were only about 4,000 in stands that night. So when Crazy Train sounded off, that thing echoed through that whole stadium. I was like, wow, that's freaking awesome. So we didn't get walk-up songs until we moved into Turner Field. So that was 97. So I had been in the league 2 years. And when they came up to me in spring training of 97 saying that we were going to have walk-up songs at Turner Field, I was like, there's only one I want, but I got to ask permission first.
Right.
That's kind of, you know, the thing to do. And so next time I saw Larry Walker, I said, do you mind? I mean, that's a badass song. He's like, ain't it though? You know? And you know, it's been my signature song, you know, ever since. I think I can't tell you how many people have walked up and said, man, I'm walking down through the annals of Turner Field and you know, when you hear Crazy Train come on, you know, who's coming up to bat and, you know, running back to the aisles to watch me hit. So, yeah. Yeah. To you know, when I retired, Ozzy actually wrote me a note and said, I'm honored that your walk-up song has been Crazy Train for this long and best of luck, all this kind of stuff.
So oh, wow.
It's pretty cool to have the man himself, you know, reach out and say you appreciate it.
How about a rat? And do you have a song that you ride to the stand in? Do you have to listen to? Just one that comes to mind.
The Beautiful People by Marilyn Manson is the only song I got to listen to in the mornings.
In the mornings, I'm not much of a morning person, to be honest with you. So I like it as quiet as it's kind of the calm before the storm, you know, kind of thing. Probably anything upbeat Al Dean. My Kind of Party or something like that. You know what I mean? Like something to kind of, you know, in the afternoon might get me going after my afternoon nap, you know? yeah, that's the only one I can really think of. Now, I know when we used to do the E3 hunt at Roachie's out in Fort Scott, Kansas, you know, Al Dean and Luke would be in camp with us. So, I mean, we didn't dare play anything else other than what those two guys had, so.
And I guess, are you still pretty in contact with those guys? Are you hear from them?
Yeah, very good friends. Tombo and I talk quite a bit. Spoke to Luke and Jason about a month ago when I was in Nashville. Tried to get up with those guys. Every once in a while, we'll cross the streams, get the old crew back together. Hung out with those guys out at Roachie's about 3 or 4 years ago while they were out at the E3 hunt, and it's crazy when we get the old band back together. It's a lot of fun. Those guys are still
as crazy as ever.
Batshit crazy, man. They're still wrecking cars and, you know,
playing pranks. I'm sure
demolishing cars and stuff like they're
making content.
Hopefully. Making content.
Boy, he would hate to be in camp with you, Alex. You know it.
Why?
Because you just 3 a.m. just bouncing off the walls like a dope head.
Yeah, we don't go to bed till 3 a.m., to be honest with you. Some of them don't go to bed at all.
Well, that's me. Yeah. That's generally. But I like to be up early and going. So you need to go. When are we going coyote hunting? That's a good question. You text me the other night, and I just had got home, and I'm like, it's like 12:15 at night, and I'm like, are you okay? You know,
yeah, I had money on football games, and you're out coyote hunting.
Yeah. I just got home, and I looked at my phone, and I was like, did he really text me back as late?
Have you guys had the opportunity to go coyote hunting in the Midwest?
I have.
Alex has.
Like with the greyhounds and stuff?
No. I've never ran them with dogs.
Bro. Man, I did that a couple years ago, and so I'm in this flatbed truck, and he's got 5 greyhounds, okay? And we're riding through these little CRP fields, and sure enough, one gets up, and here we go. And, I mean, we're going 60, 70 miles an hour through the middle of this CRP field. We hit a hole, we're done, right? So he's like, when I tell you I'm going to slide this truck sideways – and you pull that string right there as hard as you can, and that's going to let them greyhounds out. And they're going to come flying out of that thing, and they will have him caught by the time he gets to the tree line. And I kid you not, man, we're going 50, 60 miles an hour. And he goes,
all right, get ready. And he slides out. He goes, no. I pulled that string, and then things were stretched out, like just like you would see at the dog track, right? And they caught that thing within probably 150, 200 yards.
No kidding. I've just now heard about this, like this past week.
I think we caught three or four that morning, and I was somewhere between scared to death and very exhilarated.
You know, probably took you back to your youth, though, running, you know, deer dogs. I mean, but not quite that great.
We definitely did not do it like that. The first time, I was like, I'm going to die today. I was texting my wife saying, sweetie, I love you. I don't know what's going to happen today.
Did those dogs kill the coyote? Or yes. They go, okay.
Oh, yeah, they rip them apart.
So they have... It's just like anything else. They have like a lead dog that will go up and he's probably the fastest, and he knocks the coyote off his feet, and then they got the
fence dogs
to come in and just.
Oh, they'll total an $80,000 truck for a coyote. I mean, I've seen them in the mid. Yeah. When we go up to when I was up there in January or February, when I went and bought the Jeep in Iowa, they wanted me to go with them. They're like, hey, let's go run some coyotes. I'm like, well, I didn't bring my gun. They're like, well, you don't need a gun.
Yeah. Well, the trucks aren't necessarily that nice, but to outfit them and customize them the way they want them to coyote hunt, I guarantee you that every one of them is worth that much.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They've got those doors. I mean, they flip them, and I mean, it's gone. And those, that's like a sport all in itself. I mean, just like deer dogs, just like thermal hunting. And then, you know, I would love to try it once, but I'll be honest with you, my nerves can't handle it no more. I can't deal with
Boy,
it.
Boy, let me tell you, I was, my stomach was in knots. Yeah. For a while until, you know, and then about the second or third one that we got on, I was like, yeah, let's go. Like, get, go faster. Yeah, it was crazy.
Well, that was funny. So let's talk. What is legend? I mean, I see you wearing a hat.
No,
you, it's just a hat? I thought it was some new thing you were coming out with. So
every once in a while, these companies will just send me stuff out of the blue, and I was like, man, that's a cool hat, you know, it's got an elk on it and everything. So
see, here I was thinking it was going to be a new brand just coming out with or something. It would be good. I mean, you could probably
pull off
that.
The legend brand.
Yeah, legend brand. So
let me ask you a question about what these guys are making nowadays in MLB. Does it blow your mind, especially one in particular that just got paid
$700 million?
Yeah,
a little bit. Yeah. It blows my mind that the Dodgers, you know, just spent $1 billion on two players. You know, that's crazy.
And one of them's not even going to get to play this year, is he? Isn't he out, the pitcher?
No. Well, he's not going to pitch. He's going to hit. So, Ohtani.
Yeah.
But it's just like, you know, when I was playing, I'll bet Mike Schmidt was going, that guy's making $15 million a year. You know, I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, I look at guys today and I go, that guy's making $30 million a year.
Right,
I mean?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I wish I was younger and had been born later.
I didn't know if you thought about strapping them back up, trying one more.
Just one more round.
No. I need knee replacement, my right knee, which I'm thinking about getting done here pretty soon. But, yeah, I mean, it's more power to him.
I mean,
all those things that we did, and the people before me did, to make sure that we don't have a salary cap, that we have free agency, that all of our money is guaranteed. That's what we fought all those years for.
Paved the road.
And you got an owner that just spent $1 billion on two players. I think the owners are doing okay.
Yeah.
You know, do I think there's a ceiling at some point? I don't know how there can't be, to be honest with you. At some point, I mean, when is enough enough?
Yeah.
I don't know. But the fact of the matter is as long as Major League Baseball players have the strongest union in professional sports, there will be no salary cap. So you'll continue to see it go up and up. I never thought I would see a guy make $700 million in my lifetime. And I hope he's, part of me hopes
he's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Part of me hopes he's not. You know, yeah. the Atlanta Brave in me hopes he's not.
Yeah.
You know, but he's doing stuff that nobody's ever done in a game. You know, not even right. Babe Ruth. You know, Babe Ruth wasn't this good.
Mm-mm.
I mean, this dude's a player, man. Throw the ball 100 miles an hour, hit the ball 500 feet, win MVPs like they're going out of style. He's the real deal.
Yeah, I believe so too. Yeah, it's crazy. I was just wondering if there's like ever going to be like an ending to it. But you know, you can look at what the Yankees have done, the Red Sox, the Dodgers. Money don't buy you rings. You can spend all the money in the world you want to. It's about who gets hot in October.
And I saw the power rankings that just came out 2 or 3 days ago. You know who's number one?
Braves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they have us winning like 5 or 6 more games than the Dodgers.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure the Dodgers are number two. I think Rangers are number three. Houston's up there. Philly's up there. You know, but you're exactly right. It does not guarantee you rings. If I can promise you this, if the Dodgers are not hot, you know, at the 1st of October and they, you know, got a key position player hurt or a key starter hurt, they're not going to win it.
Right.
You know, yeah. Somebody's going to be full strength rolling into the playoffs. Hopefully it's us.
That's right.
When's the last time you were watching BP and you just walked out and was like, let me just see if I still got it? When's the last time you put one over the wall just to see if you could still do it?
I've taken some BP probably might have been right after COVID.
Oh, okay.
Maybe 2 or 3 years
ago. A couple years ago, yeah.
No, it was right before COVID. It was before COVID. So it'd probably been 4 years ago, 5 years ago. Yeah, it was ugly.
You torch one out?
No. It was ugly, man.
Really?
Yeah, I haven't picked up a bat in forever. Like, I can go out and, you know, hit my kids ground balls and pop-ups and stuff like that, but timing, or hitting is timing. And if you don't go and do it every day, you lose that timing, you know? Not to mention, like, I can't remember the last time I lifted a weight, so, like, I'm not as nearly as strong as I was when I was playing. So, yeah, it's
well, you lose a lot of that muscle memory and stuff too. You 100%. Know, it's like working out. Like if you do it every day and you build all this strength, if you quit for a week, you can immediately tell the difference. You know, so if you
shooting your bow, same thing.
When I was, there you go. When I was playing, I could take 200 swings, barely break a sweat. Right. I took 10 swings that day and thought I was about to have a heart attack. Like, just, you don't do it. You know?
Right.
It's all that muscle memory. Like you said, you don't shoot a bow for a year, and then all of a sudden you pull back 70 pounds, 72 pounds, 40 or 50 times. I guarantee you can't wipe your butt the next day.
You know? And it creaks. Your bones creak when you do it. If you don't practice consistently, shoot. And situational practicing. I'm assuming when you're at the highlight of your career, the high point of your career in baseball, you want a fastball, you want curveballs, you want these pitches thrown at you. You don't want this lobbed in. So if you're standing in the yard shooting at 20 yards every single day on flat ground, every single chance, you don't get the opportunity to situationally prepare for that high angle shot or right underneath you. And so we talk about this a lot. Put your toes on the edge of the porch when you're standing there. Pretend like you're having to bend in an awkward angle. Get in that saddle, set in the deer stand, and practice for that stuff. Because at the end of the day, if you're not prepared for it when it happens, you're probably going to mess up. Well, I have.
And how many times are you sitting in a tree and you're like, okay, I got like a lane cut here, I got a lane cut here, and I got a lane cut here. Like I'm facing all three lanes. And you're like, okay, this scenario happens, this scenario. None of those three scenarios
comes behind you.
Right here, and you're going to be sitting down. He's going to be right here to your right underneath it, and you're going to have to figure out some way to get stood up, turned, not busted by the doe he's with, not have him see you, get drawn, and execute a shot. Good luck. Good luck.
Have you been in a saddle at all?
Never been in a saddle, no.
We got to get you in one, let you try it at least. I'll tell you where it'll benefit And we've had this conversation with Jared Mills. We've had it with we had it with Waddell. We've talked to these people about it. It's not necessarily the guy hunting. It's these camera guys. It changes the whole game when you're able to hunt out of a saddle, because you go in and you hang two deer stands, you're making a lot of noise.
Yeah.
You walk in with a saddle and a platform, you climb up, you bounce off the backside of that stand, you're literally in the tree in 3-4 minutes. Yeah. I mean, where you're not making a lot of noise and stuff. So I would love to talk to, and I bet, Foy, I bet he's, Jake, I would assume he's Jake. Been in a saddle before.
I'm sure they have. Like I said, again, 6'4", 2'4", he's a big old boy. But when you're talking about hanging and hunting,
yeah,
that's probably the way to go. Because you're right. Like, dragging those aluminum stands in there and putting sticks up, and it's
just another tool.
Yeah,
it is.
Another tool in the toolbox that helps us. And I love mine. I mean, I'm a big guy, and I hunt out of mine. I'll stand up 6 or 7 hours.
Unfortunately, see, I can't. Like, I have to sit down. My back and my neck will kill me if I stand up for that long. So I have to sit down. But unfortunately, on the saddle side, you know, Realtree has, not to say that you can't have certain quality of camera hunting out of a saddle, but they want everything
perfectly
still, like camera arm, lighting just perfect. And I know whenever you're self filming, some of that probably gets lost because I mean, let's face it, you got a deer coming in and you're having to worry about self-filming. That's I couldn't imagine doing it. I would imagine it's very difficult. So they want everything. The lighting's got to be right. Yeah. You know, everything's got to be perfectly still. So, yeah.
But so with that, we've talked about this a lot, the landscape of the way that we entertain ourselves has changed so much, where we don't necessarily look for that cinematic approach that was all over TV back in the day. And everything that, I mean, Realtree, Midwest Whitetail, Jared Mills, Heartland Bowhunter, those guys, they put so much emphasis on what you just said, the lighting, the camera being still, and they create a cinematic picture for us to watch. Whereas guys like us, DIY, the guys that are doing it every weekend and self-filming and everything, I think it's so relatable to that and to what we do in general. And for what we're able to capture, it relates to those guys. Don't get me wrong. I love watching Sequin stuff and how they put everything together. Yeah. But you can kind of relate to it. And I look at it like, go back to the days of when you were playing early baseball and how TV was. You know, it didn't capture every little thing. I would love to watch games that you played in the mid-90s when it was you and Bobby and Andrew Jones and all those guys, and it wasn't that cinematic approach, but you seemed to learn a lot from it. And so I don't think we lose that much from not having it, but I tell you what, Realtree's been doing it long enough. They're a lot smarter than me on it.
To be honest with you, and look, I tried to get Duff to go to YouTube a long time ago, you know, to get away from TV so that we could make some mistakes, you know. If we shot something in low light, Realtree's not going to use it, you know. I mean, people would be on our website saying, oh, it's dark, da 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 da. YouTube gives a crap, you know. I mean, it's just like, I mean, like you said, I mean, oh, hey, we killed a giant here in, you know, Kansas. Mm-hmm. Here's a 10-minute clip. You know, you show them walking up and da 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 da. You can get away with a lot more stuff.
That's right.
You know, but I have the utmost respect for you guys that do the self filming. That's amazing to me because, man, once I see that deer, I am locked in on that deer. I don't care if I get it on camera.
That's the way we are, though. I mean,
but see, that's the way B Dank and I. That's why we mesh so well. He's like, look, that deer comes out, you stay focused on that deer. My job is back here. Mm-hmm. I got it. I will get it. All right. You just worry about, you got enough to worry about executing the shot in front of the camera. I got everything back here. And I never worried about it, you know, with the exception of that first hunt.
Yeah. But he was asking for advice on that one. Yeah. He wouldn't do it. I mean, and that's, you and I've talked about that a bunch. I've always said that, and you've told me, do not worry about me. I'll do my job. Yeah. You do yours. Mm-hmm. And if we don't get it on camera, okay, that's not the end of the world. We got the story up too.
I can't tell you how many deer Matt Duff has let walk because he was worried about
the perfect
shot from the camera guy. Yeah. Like there was an instance in New Mexico where Duff and the camera guy were got separated by 40, 50 yards. Duff has a 340, 350 at 7 yards, right? And doesn't shoot the deer because he's not positive that Brandon Adams has the shot. Brandon Adams has some of the most phenomenal footage you will ever see of this deer, this elk walking up to Duff, and Duff didn't shoot him.
It's right on top of him. I remember right seeing on top that video. Of him.
And a giant. And we're all just like, what are you doing? Like, shoot the animal, you know? If we don't get him, at that point, if we don't get him, I don't care. Yeah. Like, that's the hunt of a lifetime.
Yeah.
And that very week, you know, I could sit here and say, I had two of the greatest hunts of my life, and neither one of them resulted in the kill of an animal. Yeah. It was just, it's something I hadn't done before. You know, I got 100 elk out in front of me. I got, you know, 12 satellite bulls and a herd bull. I can't even talk to be dank. It's so loud. I mean, and they're every breath, you know, and it was the most awesome hunt I'd ever been on. And then to actually be 100 yards from where Duff had this encounter, you know, I was like, oh my gosh, it's change your shorts worthy, you know?
Yeah.
Kind of stuff.
Did it, going out elk hunting, did that change your perspective on chasing whitetails? Do you still like to chase whitetails the best?
There's nothing that I'll love chasing whitetails forever. There's nothing like getting in the hip pocket of one of those booners, you know, with a bow, 20 foot up a tree with a camera over your shoulders. Nothing that beats it. But elk hunting slowly gaining.
Yeah.
I don't get a chance to do it
right
every year, you know? So the last time I went was probably before COVID. So it's been 4 or 5 years since I've been. I have one on the docket for September of this year. So I'm looking forward to, it's hard for me to elk hunt because of the knee, the back, the neck. I could probably use surgery on all of them. I could probably do it pretty hard for a day, but about the second or third day, it'd take its toll on me.
Hell, it'd take its toll on me. Yeah. I'm not going.
Have you considered buying a piece in Georgia or even in the Midwest to start doing hunts out of? Just to sell?
I was in the guide business in Texas. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work. In the Midwest, no, because that would make me an absentee owner. And I know the guy at Triple Creek Outfitter by the name of Richard Blakesley. He has probably 40 farms, and he's running 75 or 80 deer hunts a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's work.
Yeah.
That's work. And it's not just from October 1st on. Like, the amount of work that they put in during the summer, getting those stands ready, getting those feeders ready, running cameras, you know, filling cornfields. I mean, it's just like, it's never ending once you get to about mid-July, you know. And they're still going, you know. And not only is he doing deer hunts, he has places in Texas, right? So he's back and forth between Kansas and Texas. He's running pheasant hunts. He's running duck hunts. He's running goose hunts. He's running sandhill crane hunts. I mean, come on. Wow. It's just like
at some point there's got to be
like 20, 25 pounds.
Yeah.
You know, and then on top of that, now the regulations in Kansas are such that it used to be you're pretty close to 100% draw probability in Kansas. Now he's got, let's say he's got 90 hunters booked for next year. He can count on 25% of them not getting drawn. So right. Now he's out money, you know? Yeah. So it's hard. I think if I did anything, it would be here in Georgia. I have 10 acres in Canton. I have my lake house up in Blue Ridge. But if I did anything, it would be like right around the Canton area. Cause okay. I know there's some big deer there. I got a charcoal lady that lives over off of, that lives in Canton, maybe, I don't know, 400 or 500 yards from me. She's got like 400 acres, some of the most beautiful property you've ever seen in your life. And I ride by her place and there's 25, 30 deer out there feeding every single night. I see racks. I'm just like, I got to get her phone number. We got to figure that out.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's link up. I'll ride with you. Yeah, exactly. You can knock on the door. Right,
perfect. Guarantee you will get
it. Hey, well, I'll film.
Anytime you want a name drop, I'll get out of the truck.
Here's my friend.
Have you met my friend?
Yeah. Well, you talk about seeing giant deer and us being able to see a lot of deer. I mean, Cody took a great deer in Canton this year, and he chased it all year. It's going to be a great series that he's putting together of that whole hunt from throughout the season. But just last night, I was in Bartow County, and one of the good things about thermal hunting is, especially with the scopes we've got now, you can see the horns on a bright lit night. I saw the biggest, probably one of the largest deer I've ever seen in this part of the country last night. In the thermal, could see him clear as day. I got some video of that. I may have to drop that out there.
Did you drop him off to the taxidermist this morning?
yeah. Oh, boy, it was tempting. Well, I was looking at him through that. Yeah, redneck started to come out. But being able to see the things that we've got to in the area, it comes full circle for us because – we get to, you know, somebody might run into you in the Canton area or whatever. And this is a question that came up to me, and I was thinking about this last night. Is the younger generation starting to not recognize you as much?
Yeah. Yeah.
They're like,
yeah.
Chipper who?
Chipper who?
And then they hear, oh, he's that guy in that Morgan Wallen song.
I guarantee you, if let's say Austin Riley and I walked into a Kroger together, side by side. I mean, who do you think is going to get right. mobbed?
Yeah.
I don't even know who Austin Riley is. I'm going to come talk to you.
But the fact that, like, the older generation, people my age and probably a little older, maybe a hair younger as well, the middle-aged guys, ladies, grandmas, they recognize me.
Yeah.
But the younger kids, they're like, I can't tell you how many times I've been at my kid's baseball game or flag football game or whatever. And guy walks up, middle-aged guy walks up with his 10-year-old boy, 12-year-old boy. And, you know, the dad goes, do you know who this is? And the guy, you know, I'm like, gosh, dang. And the kid looks at me and goes, no, you know, and he's like, it's Chipper Jones. And the kid goes, you could just see him going, so, yeah. You know? I mean, no, absolutely no clue. Part of it is refreshing because I spent so much time under the spotlight when I was playing that I found myself shying away from eye contact whenever I'd be walking down the street or walking down the hall. I'd never make eye contact because I didn't want people to know I was there. Right. I just wanted to go about my business and do it with as little fanfare as possible. And, but yeah, I certainly I had a dream the other night that, a situation similar to me and Austin Riley walking into like a supermarket or something. I was somewhere public and I walked in with a couple of the guys, and all these kids come running up and they're mobbing everybody except for me, you know? And I'm just sitting there like twiddling my thumbs, man, out of sight, out of mind, baby. You know, it's over.
Well,
it's
over. My daughter literally sings that 98 Braves song every time we get in the truck. She wants to sing that song. And I told her last night we were talking. I said, we got a podcast tomorrow with Chipper Jones. And she's like, who is he? And I mean, she's six. And yeah. I said, well, you know that song you sing, the 98 Braves? And they say, Andrew and Chipper. And she's like, oh, that guy.
Yeah.
She's, was Morgan Wallen going to be there? And I'm like, no, Morgan Wallen's not going to be there, baby. But and so we got to talking, but it came to my mind that, you know, the way the generations fall, and, you know, of course our dads know exactly who you are, and the grandmas and everyone else. And then of course we do. And probably the 10 years before that, and 10 years from now, though, for us, you'll still be a legend and still be present in the outdoor space, I hope, more than anything, because we love watching you do that stuff. And for your opportunity to come full circle, as we said earlier, and get back to in tune with Realtree, that's been really cool to see. So there's the little culprit right there coming through the door. So,
well, it's it's, like I said, the baseball thing has opened so many doors for me, and it's allowed me to be able to provide so much for my family. And now getting to see my kids get into it. Like, I think if we did anything around the Canton area, it would be more for my wife, for my 18 and 19 year old kids. Because when I'm home, I want to be home.
That's right.
You know, like if I'm gone for a week to the Midwest hunting and I come home and immediately wake up the next morning and go climb a tree in Canton, Georgia, I'm going to probably hear about it from mama. So I pick my battles. But you know, a deer, like I showed you a picture of this in my backyard, it's a really, really nice deer. And my wife would be ecstatic. My 18 and 19 year old kid would be ecstatic if we could somehow keep that deer somewhat close and be able to know late season he's going to come back in. I've got one tree on my property that I could probably hang on, and I think we could get that deer killed. But if I go out there and kill him, my wife's going to be like, you son of a, you know, yeah. You go all over the country hunting all these big deer, and we got something 50 yards out our back door, and you can't let one of us shoot it?
Yeah.
So, I have to put up with that. That's what happens when you marry an alpha female.
Well, you know, we'll talk. You can drop some pins. I'll knock on some doors. I'll bring you a signed permission slip to your house, hand delivered.
Sounds good.
Have you ever had the chance to go out and hunt with Charlie O'Brien? Don't he have a ranch?
He does, I guess, outside of Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Only time I hunted with Charlie, we were actually still playing. So this would have been, he was my teammate in 96. And we were in Colorado, and he took me on my first ever bow hunt.
Okay.
And we were mule deer hunting, and we actually pulled back on a 30 inch muley.
Ooh.
It was at about 60 yards, and we couldn't get any closer. I mean, he was laying down facing us. And I had never shot at an animal with my bow before, right?
Oh, wow.
And I got a 60-yard shot at a 30-inch muley, you know, and I literally, like, he's laying down facing us, but you can see a bunch of his chest and his brisket. So Charlie goes, what's the farthest you've shot your bow at? And I said, like, 30, 35? He goes, okay, take your 35-yard pin and aim between his antlers, right? So he's like, we're gonna draw, we're gonna stand up, and we're just gonna let it eat, you know? So we both did, and we both missed, and we get up there to where the deer was laying down, and we were about 6 inches short of him, about 4 inches apart.
Oh, wow.
Just short. But what an experience. Yeah. Charlie's awesome.
Yeah.
I know he's got a high fence place out there in Tulsa where he does some breeding.
Yeah.
or did, but man, he's been all over the world. He's killed some big stuff through the years.
Yeah. When you owned the property in Texas, did you guys ever get to do any of that hog hunting from the helicopters?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. How was that?
I personally didn't do it.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't like helicopters.
Yeah. Hell no. Stay out of a helicopter, yeah, please.
Right.
Get on a big plane, something yeah. that's, you know.
I'm not big on the helicopters. My dad and my ranch hands, they get up there with the ARs and they would do some damage, man. We had a pretty good population out there, not like some of the ranches. If we had a lot of water and the creeks were up, we were overrun with them. But more times than not, the creeks were pretty dry. Mm-hmm. Maybe some stagnant ponds here and there throughout some of those creek bottoms. But we killed some 300-pound boars and.
God, I'd give anything to coyote hunt out there back in the day. God, I wish we could have. I would have given anything to have went out there.
The best is killing those, you know, 20, 30, 40-pound little piglets.
Yeah.
Them things eat. I bet.
Now you got Nick's interest.
I'm trying to think. Let me find one here. Sorry, I got a bunch of
have
questions.
You got? Wait a minute. Now we've started a new thing, Chipper. That Nick's he's done this new thing every episode we've done for like the last 20, 30 episodes, and it's called Thoughts by Nick. And I hope to God he's got a good one for you, because if he don't, I'm gonna be very upset, because we've talked everything from toilet seat height and rest stop areas to
it's a toilet paper holder height.
Yeah, yeah, toilet paper holder height and everything. So
I don't know. I got some old ones on here that we've asked before, but
you didn't have a new random thought by Nick?
Man, most of them are just questions.
Glenda Mitchell.
Right.
Billboards.
Does anybody else get the feeling that the toilet seat is shrinking?
Yes.
The bowl's getting smaller in the middle.
Well, I'm thinking
random thought by Chipper.
The seats themselves are getting either that or my ass is getting bigger.
Yeah. You know? I think it's both. And they are getting lower too. It's a toilet seat for
us.
A tall.
Old men can't squat like that anymore. No, you know?
My knees don't bend
it over. Plop down on the on the toilet seat.
Yeah.
Boy, we are getting way down the rabbit hole now.
Yeah. Oh, you have no idea how far we went.
Here's one. And are you a motorcycle rider?
No.
Okay.
No.
Where did the motorcycle wave come from? Like, who thought it would be a good idea when you pass another motorcycle, they put a hand down? Like, is that like, was some guy just sitting around the bar one day and said, I tell you what, boy, when I pass you tomorrow, I'm going to put my hand down. But you ever know, it doesn't matter. It could be a Harley passing a crotch rocket or.
Yeah, no, they did it.
I know about the Jeep wave. I got a Jeep, so everybody in a Jeep's got a wave. Yeah. Anybody else
now
in a Jeep?
The ducks is the thing.
You got ducks in your windshield on your Jeep?
No.
You heard
Have
about
you not
that?
Seen that trend?
Oh, they trade, like you see a Jeep park somewhere, you take a duck off of your dash and put it on their dash or put it on their door or whatever.
What the hell's wrong with people?
I can
got nothing better to do.
That Jeep Liberty out there has not got a single duck put on it. I'm just going to throw that out there. They see
ours,
talk about it outdoors on the back.
Doesn't have
no,
one either.
No. So,
let me ask you one more. What's a successful morning in the woods to you?
Successful morning for me would be slightly overcast, below 30, no drama on my phone, action in the woods. I'm pretty simple. I'm not big on bluebird mornings. I like a little overcast, mm-hmm. little mild winds. I want it cold. Can even be like, you know, little flurry here and there, a little mist, whatever, because I think that's when big deer mm-hmm. hit the ground. But yeah, no drama on the phone. I don't want mama texting me, telling me all kinds of drama happening at the house, because that gets me out of, you know, the correct mindset. Blows my mojo. But yeah, like action in the woods. Like there's nothing better than sitting there and you being able to hear, and you hear that rustle of the dead leaves, you know, where something's nosing something or something's chasing something or something's walking up behind you. You know what I mean? There's nothing as a hunter that can replace that kind of chill bump moment. Mm-hmm. And I think whenever you have a morning full of that, it's successful. It doesn't have to end in the harvesting of an animal. You know, like I said earlier, some of my favorite hunts, there was no harvesting of an animal, but some of those first experiences in New Mexico hunting elk, chasing elk, man, I'll remember those forever, you know.
Yeah.
And nothing hit the ground. Mm-hmm. Just had great experiences.
What would be the date?
Oh, that's a good one.
November 7th.
Yeah, that's everybody.
I like the ninth. The ninth's been awful good to me.
We're all in the same vicinity. Yeah. I think you get that 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, you know, area where, you know, you've kind of gone through the pre rut. Now you're there starting to get with mm-hmm. you know, yeah. and you know the next giant could be right around the corner, and it could be a deer that you've never seen before. I think that's the great thing about that time of year is that so many deer get displaced because they are hot on the trail of a doe, or they are trying to keep them segregated from the rest of the herd. And then all of a sudden they're on a different farm, you know, or they're on your farm.
Yep.
You know, yep. how many deer preseason do you get on camera, especially in the Midwest, and get you all excited and then you never see them again?
Yeah,
you know, because they're gone. They're on, but there's a different herd. You know, once you get to Halloween, there's a different herd on your property than there was in September,
right,
or August. Yeah, you know, it's a completely different herd, which I think is very cool.
Yeah, that's why guys in the Midwest don't necessarily like the rut as much.
Yeah, you
know? Yeah. So
it's hard to hunt the rut, you know, especially if you have a specific deer mm-hmm. that you're going after. Now, if you're hunting age or, you know, a specific score, that might change things a little bit. But if you're out for a specific deer that you get on camera in August and September, you may have to wait until late season when the rut is over mm-hmm. and he actually comes back home to eat, you know, but you might have to wait until December. How many 150s, 160s are you going to pass in the Midwest to get to that one buck?
None.
See, that's the discipline that I talked about earlier, you know, with like a guy like LaRoche or Jeff Danker or Waddell or in this case, Lee Ellis. I mean, he's after one specific deer. And I'm with you. Like, I'm... Trust me, if I've been in the woods for 18 out of 21 days and mama's chirping at me to get back home and a 160 walks under the tree, I'm sorry, he's probably going to get shot, you know? So we'll hope that one of the other guys in the crew gets a shot at the big boy.
What's the most memorable hunt that you have?
Last year was pretty good. I killed a 182 in Kansas, and it's not just the 182, it's the circumstances behind it. We got this deer on camera, and he's a 200-inch deer. Like, I shot him at, he was 182, and he had 20 inches broke off.
Oh wow.
And so we were hunting Cow Creek in Kansas, and I had this deer narrowed down. I had him crossing in two spots on Cow Creek. They were about 200 yards apart. Cow Creek ran east and west, and it elbowed and ran north. And I had a stand. I had a set right on the elbow. Alfalfa field here to the north of us, and then property line, train tracks, property line. So right here at the elbow, they would cross, and then from where I walked in about 200, 250 yards to the east, there was another crossing, and the creek was frozen, okay? So there were two very specific places that they crossed. Otherwise, they don't like being on ice. Mm-hmm. Deer don't like being on ice. So
Alex don't either.
Right? So I'd been hunting this deer. I had four or five encounters with him. I had him at 27 yards at full draw. He spooked on me. Didn't get it done. So I'm basically hunting the elbow, and he's skirting me, crossing at this, you know, back to the east 200 yards and going out into the alfalfa. Well, three nights before I killed him, as I'm walking out, I didn't know that he crossed at this other crossing, and he was standing in the alfalfa, and I bumped him.
Oh, God.
Okay? Bumped him all the way off the property. So I'm like, well, I've just royally screwed this up. But I can't get out any other way because I think he's south of Cow Creek. So I'm going to walk to the north of Cow Creek on my way out. But he had, he outsmarted me. He got into he was 50 yards into the alfalfa, and I walked right up on him. Blew him right over the train tracks to the north, right off the property. I was like, well, I'm screwed. But I had a good, wind the next morning, and went right back into the elbow. And about 10 o'clock, two does come hauling the mail from the north, right across the alfalfa, right in across Cow Creek on the south side. And I'm like, man, they looked spooked, you know, like coyote, hunter, something. So about 3 minutes later, I turn back around, and he's standing at the train tracks on the north end of the alfalfa, and here he comes. I mean, hauling the mail. So he was either pressured or, I don't know, maybe he was just wanting to stay with those two does, but they crossed in that spot 200 yards to the east of me. So I had Duff in camp, and I went back that morning. I was like, this afternoon, we're going to tag team this sucker because he's south of Cow Creek. If he's south of Cow Creek, we're going to kill him. If he's north of Cow Creek, we got no shot, right? So I set him up at the crossing 200 yards east of the elbow, and him and Donnie Mixon, who was one of my good buddies, was filming him, and they were set up on the ground. And at 4:45 that afternoon, five does come out, and here he comes right behind him. Okay. Duff has him broadside at 22 yards. Zips him right underneath.
Oh.
Zips him. I mean, it's unbelievable. He is. We get out of the tree. We thought he killed him. You know, he's like, yeah, I just shot him, you know, think I made a good shot, blah, 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 blah. So we get down. I'm like stoked. We got this deer on the ground finally. And we get up there and he's like, I think I missed him.
Oh my gosh.
And I go, what? He's like, so we ran it back and sure enough, man, I mean, he zipped him. You can see the hair. Not hurt by any means. I don't even really think he knew what happened, you know, but he's still south of Cow Creek, right? So we got a bad wind the next morning, and I mean, Duff is, he's rurnt. I bet. He is rurnt. I mean, big time. So I was like, we had a good wind the following afternoon, and I dropped him off at the same crossing east of us. And we got about 50 yards. It's me and B Dank now. I told you when me and B Dank get together, we kill some big stuff. We got about 50 yards after dropping him off, and I go, it's going to be our turn tonight. We're going to kill this sucker tonight. I'm telling you, he's not going to cross right there again. Sure enough, about 5 o'clock, here he comes. He's going to cross the elbow, and got him at 35 yards and pasted him. It was awesome. Great recovery, great photos. Just an awesome deer. Got him back from a taxidermist, brought him home from Kansas about 3 weeks ago, and he's probably got 10-inch brow tines. He just
should have told you to bring him. We could have hung him up in here and talked about it.
He's so awesome to look at, and you know, I could show you guys the pictures of him
prior
pre-breakup, and you'd be like, oh my gosh. Yeah. Like, it's unbelievable that he broke off 20 inches and you still look at him and you're like, oh my God. You know, it's just, he's one of those jaw dropping kind of deer that, that pictures don't really do justice. But when you, yeah, when you see the mount, when you see the hunt, when you see this deer on the hoof, it's, he just, he blows your mind.
You think he broke it off fighting?
I'd like to see what broke it off. Yeah. You know, right. Yeah. You know, 'cause I didn't see anything that rivaled him.
Yeah.
You know, during the course of the season. Now, granted, we're pretty close to the property line, but I can't imagine at some point we're not going to get some picture of something that would rival him.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And we certainly didn't have anything on camera this year that would have rivaled him, because I ate my tag in Kansas this year.
Yeah. Those taste horrible.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. I've ate an Illinois one 2 years in a row now.
So. I got to eat one this year for the first time in a while.
I can promise you this. There's nothing like eating an Iowa tag. Iowa tags are really bad.
I've had to eat those a few times myself. So,
man, I got some rapid fire questions for you real quick. You up for it?
Gotcha.
It'll be pretty quick.
All right.
Coke or Pepsi?
Coke.
Baseball or football?
To watch?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Football.
Baseball or deer hunting?
Deer hunting.
He's already said deer hunting before. He told us that last time.
wild turkey 101 or hunting turkeys?
Ooh, man, I had a bad experience with some wild turkey ones. I might go with turkey hunting.
Barbecue or pizza?
Dang. 1A and 1B, man. I can't pick between those.
You can say both.
Those are both staples. You can say both. Now, yeah, you could have said sweet tea. I probably would have said sweet tea.
I didn't even put sweet tea on here. College football or NFL?
You probably got a lot of NFL guys that are old friends of yours. Yeah, to this day.
I'd probably say NFL.
This was Fulton County Stadium, Turner Field, or Truist Park?
Truist, 100%.
Fenway or Wrigley, and why?
They're both trash, man. I hate both of those
really,
places,
really?
Man. I would probably say Wrigley. Let's go Wrigley because, man, no offense, but Boston's a dump. Like, Fenway's a dump.
Really?
Yeah, it's bad.
I gotcha. Snow vacations or beach vacations? Both.
Beach.
Yeah. What are you killing him today with?
Right, these are good ones. I like these. These are good ones.
Ford or Chevy?
Come on, man.
Ford. He's a Ford man all the way.
Fat lefty or righty?
What do they say? If you want to go fast, buy a Chevy. If you want to last, buy a Ford.
That's right.
Yeah, I'm a Ford guy. What was the next one?
Bat lefty or righty?
Lefty.
Day games or night games?
Night games. Hate day games.
Gun hunting or bow hunting? I think I know.
Bow hunting.
Copenhagen or Skoal?
I'm a Skoal guy.
Midwest hunting or Texas hunting?
Midwest.
That's all I got, brother. I appreciate you playing that.
No, that was good. That was good.
Y'all buckled me a couple times. The barbecue or pizzas, those are probably my two favorites right there.
Where's your favorite barbecue place in Georgia since you said that? Is there one that sticks out?
There's a new one in Hickory Flat. Have you been to that Cajun barbecue place over there by Tractor Supply?
I know where you're talking about, but I haven't been over
there
yet.
It's phenomenal. Is it good? The Brunswick stew is phenomenal there. I'm a big Brunswick stew guy.
Well, I'm going to have to send you home with a bag. Right. Me and Mama over there, we make some good Brunswick stew. Right. I'll send you home with a bag of it. It's froze.
That's fine. I don't care. I got a microwave. Yeah.
You thaw it out in there. It's good. We eat it a lot. Oh, yeah. So.
That's all I had, man. I wrote down a bunch of questions and wrote down that rapid fire. I thought it'd be fun to play. So.
Yeah. Let me tell you something. Brunswick stew and grilled cheeses are a big hit in my house. With a 5, a 6, and a 13 and living at home, they're a big hit. So, Brunswick stew, man. Nothing beats a good Brunswick stew.
No.
Go ahead.
I want to ask one more question. I wrote this down. I was kind of contemplating what I was going to ask. It's kind of a silly question I saw on TikTok that people asked other people. But, you know, you're a pretty big name around here in Atlanta. But who's the most famous contact you have in your phone? To you,
that's a pretty good question.
Yeah,
you know mine is Chipper Jones.
Yeah,
Man. I guess probably who's bigger, Aldean or Luke?
Ooh, I don't know. I'm not answering that. I don't
both?
Know.
Both?
Yeah, both.
Luke probably more recognizable.
Yeah, because of American Idol.
American Idol. American
yeah.
Idol.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I could go there.
I would say those are pretty famous because everybody, if you mentioned it on West Coast or East Coast, right. They would know.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's not like I have
Elon Musk,
Tiger Woods, or
right.
Yeah, I mean, so.
But but you say that you are as recognizable a name as Tiger Woods to us. You are anyway.
Yeah, but I mean, like to be internationally known. I mean, that's a whole different. Like I have, like Luke Combs is in here, Alex Rodriguez.
You still talk to any of those old Cal Ripken guys?
Well, I talk to Cal because, you know, every year at the Hall of Fame, I got a ton of, like, baseball Hall of Famers that are, you know, just phenomenal dudes. But,
I mean, you probably hit it with those, with Luke. I mean, that's a huge name.
I got Dion. Dion's in here, Coach Prime. He's kind of a big deal
yeah,
out here.
Right now he is, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
that's crazy.
It's mostly like personalities, just like ESPN personalities or
yeah.
coaches or other players and stuff like that. Like, obviously, having my relationship with Luke and Jason throughout the years, probably going on 20 years, I've known that. Like, I knew Luke before I knew Luke when he was wearing a trucker hat and a t-shirt and yeah. playing, you know, sidebars in Nashville. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, to see, you know, his goofy ass, you know, what he's become.
Oh yeah,
you know, in the last 20 years, I never would have thought in a million years he would have done. I would have thought maybe he would have had, you know, some success, you know, shaking his little butt and singing, but like yeah.
to where it goes,
a residency in Vegas or American Idol, all that kind of stuff. I mean, he's rolling in it right now. You
yeah.
know, I mean, he barely even gets to hunt anymore.
So. Yeah.
Here's a question just come to me while you're talking about this. And outside of Bobby or your dad, who's somebody that if they speak, you shut up and listen?
Well, you said
your wife,
Bobby, and my dad, probably my mom. Yeah. Yeah, well, your mom carries yeah. as much weight as any of those two.
Yeah.
I think from like a mentorship standpoint, it would have been Don Baylor back in the day when I was playing. God rest his soul. Terry Pendleton.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys are EF Hutton to me, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But other than that, it'd probably be females. The wife the wife and my mom.
Yeah.
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 So.
How about Snicker? You take a lot of advice from him nowadays?
Snit. See, I see Snit more as a contemporary. You know, only because Snit and I came up through the minors together.
Okay.
Now, he was coaching, but like, I've known Snit for over 30 years.
Okay.
You know, I mean, we've been on the Bluebird buses going from Greenville, South Carolina to, you know, Orlando, Florida.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we've been through the rigor. So it's I see him more as a contemporary, even though he's probably closer to my dad's age. We've just been buddies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, for a long time. And it's different. It's different when you've been through the bushes together and then you come up and even though Snit was a first base coach or a third base coach or, you know, an infield instructor, you know, through the years, like we shot the breeze together. Like we went out to dinner together and we've been doing it for a long time. So it's not really a mentorship kind of thing. It's more, we're more contemporaries, I feel.
Yeah. I'm good. I'm out of questions. I could sit here and keep going all day, and I know everybody's got stuff to do. So
what you got, Cody?
No, I'm good. I just appreciate you. I'm on I'm gonna stay in touch. We're gonna get some stuff locked down.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's got a gleam in his eye. He's about to get some business.
Yeah. Ask him. They'll tell you.
Hey, he's good. He don't care to talk to nobody.
I've seen him do it. We've drug some land out of places. I'm like, there ain't no way that's gonna work. And he's like, well, we got it. And I'm like, oh, let's go.
Well, I can promise you, I did some every once in a while. And this is the great part about where we live. Okay. And looking out y'all's back window, I'm like. I know, and I see the decoy down there. It's like scared me a couple times. I'm like, there's a deer down there right now, you know? But like, I'll go to the store and Taylor will be like, hey, we need a gallon of milk. So I'll go to the store and get a gallon of milk, but I won't come home for like an hour, hour and 15 minutes. She's like, where the hell you been? And I was like, I was just in one of them moves where I just driving around, you know, and kind of going down these little dirt roads and, kind of, you know, just looking at the lay of the land, you know, and I'd be like, man, that place looks deery, you know. And I was doing this one time and I drove through this little subdivision that I knew backed up to a creek, right? And so I'm driving through and I'm like, man, there's some deery spots down there, man. I need to knock on that door right there, you know. But I didn't. And I go back home and I'm thumbing through Instagram and this guy slides into my DMs and he goes, hey man, I just saw you driving through our subdivision and I recognize your truck. Because then it said Major League Bowhunter. Now it says Realtree on it. But he goes, was that you? And I go, yeah. So like we talk now.
Yeah,
and he invited me over to his house, and he's got about 20 acres back behind that crosses this creek. He's got freaking ground blinds set up. He's got a lock on over here. He's got a feeder. He's showing me pictures, and I'm like, son of a gun. Yeah, I knew it. This year killed probably 142 3-4 inch 8-point off his property. So proud of it. Had pictures of him last year. And he goes, do you think this deer is mature? I was like, he needs another year. And he ended up killing him this year, sent me a picture. And I was like, that is freaking awesome.
You know? See, he's got it easier there.
I love the interaction with the guys. I mean, you know, I could literally get arrested, you know, for like lurking through some of these. But I'm completely innocent. I'm just like, I'm literally looking.
Yeah.
At the timber, at the creeks, at the laying ground, where is their privet back there? You know, all these things that they can eat during the winter. And to have the guy reach out and then to have some kind of input as to him killing, you know, the big deer that he had back there was pretty cool.
It's a story for him forever and for 100%. You. I mean, you got to tell it there. I mean,
I threw the baseball to his kids in the front yard when I went over that day. You know, I mean.
Dad, who's this guy we're throwing the ball with?
No clue. But mom and dad.
Yeah.
So it was pretty cool.
No, I'm good.
I appreciate you coming over, man, doing this, taking the time. I know you're probably just as busy as anybody else.
We're going to shoot for 300?
100%.
You said it.
To get to 100, we went from November of 21 to the April of 22. So we went a little over a year there. And when we got to that next point, it slowed down for us as far as how many episodes we're doing. So we've got a little bit more of a span between 100 and 200 to get here. And I don't think there was ever in any other conversation we had who we wanted to have back for episode 200. And the same thing goes for 300, because it's become kind of not a Johnny come lately thing for us to do this deal. I mean, it's growing. I mean, we're growing our YouTube channels. We're growing everything we're doing. And you don't realize, I'm sure you do, but how much it means to us for you to come back and do this 200 episode and for you to even offer to do 300 again with us. I mean, I was nervous as could be, you know, texting. I'm like, come on. Because I don't want everyone to bother you, you know. And I'm like, I'm going to hit him up and I'm going to see if he wants to do it. And you got back to him. I'm like, all right, we're in.
Well,
you know?
Here's the thing. Like, okay, so it took a little more time between 100 and 200. But that just gives us more time to accumulate stories and be able to talk about new content whenever we do come in. I'm honored that you guys have me in for 100 and 200. And you want to have me in for 300? Hell, 300, you might want to have Austin Riley in. You know, I mean, that'd be a
maybe we do him at 250. That'd be a
cool one to have as well, because you've got your finger more on the pulse of what's going on with the Atlanta Braves and Braves country, you know, with a guy like him, and obviously, you know, huge outdoorsman from Olive Branch, Mississippi. So he's part of the South. He's part of Braves country. He knows what it's like to, you know, now be the face of a franchise. And obviously, I'm sure hanging out with Realtree all the time, he's got quite a few stories himself. So yeah, y'all need to try and make that happen at some point.
I think I might know a guy who might have his phone number who'd help us out with
him. He might shoot a text.
Yeah. Might throw a good word in for us on that one down the road. So, well, like the guy said, we appreciate you coming over and doing this again. Best of luck on everything moving forward. Hopefully we can do something outside of a podcast. You know, maybe we can jump in a tree, somebody go film you, or maybe you can come up for our bow shoot or something down the road. You know, we've got all kinds of things that we can do together, and you've been this close.
I'm a text away if, you know, the worst I can say is no.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, I'm busy, man. We understand totally. Yeah. Like they said, we appreciate it, and looking forward to seeing what 2024 has in store for us all. And, you know, if you ever need anything from us, you know where we're at as well.
Appreciate y'all. Thank you.
Nick, shutting her down for 200.
That was a good one, man.
It was a good one. Yep. And thank you to everybody who's followed along with us this far in the journey. You know, it's been a little bit of a delay here to get 200 out, but it was well worth the wait. Going into 2024 is going to be pretty special for us with a lot of the things that we've got working and some of the stuff that we've got coming up. Make sure, if you haven't already, get your tickets to the NWTF show in Nashville in February. Nick's going to be calling in the Grand National Calling competition up there. We are at booth 1229. So if you want to come by and see us, we'll be near the KT team guys. Come by and visit and see us. And if you need anything, you know where we're at. We appreciate you being here for this journey with us. And as we always say, we want to remind you to smile as you go, but don't forget, mount the memories. Building the foundation of your life starts at the base, and the stronger it is, the better. Talk About It Outdoors is proud of our strong partnership with United Concrete and Paving and the foundation of support they provide. Whether your new home being built needs concrete work, or that driveway you're tired of beating all the bearings from your pickup needs a paving, Michael and his team can provide any residential or commercial project support you might need from the ground up. If you're tired of tripping over that unsettled patio slab, or a future shop build needs a smooth start, United Concrete and Paving can get you going when you need it most. Give them a call at 404-831-3036 and make sure you tell them them TAI boys are where you heard it first. A few years back, when an overbearing and overgrown backyard became an eyesore, I looked for a solution to resolve. LRS Land Services created a stunning and complete transformation turnkey at an affordable price with their mulching services. Not limited to mulching, LRS can provide turnkey grading and clearing, maintenance, right-of-way clearing, and even development for any and all forestry needs. With an innovative outlook on what is best for your land and a completely different approach than others, LRS can transform your overgrown eyesore into a beautiful landscape of your dreams. Give them a call at 404-889-1105 or check their work out on Facebook at LRS Land Services. Logan and his team are ready to make your land brand new again. Are you in need of a decluttering barn or garage slap full of stuff you just don't need? Or is your construction site needing a dumpster? Give our buddy Tony at Georgia Junk and Dumpster Rental a call. With services ranging from junk removal to roll-offs, Georgia Junk is here to help with any and all removal needs. If it's time to get that parking spot back or the boat needs a place inside, Tony and his team can surely assist. Servicing Cherokee, Cobb, Bartow, and surrounding counties, give them a call at 404-406-3501 or check them out on Facebook at Georgia Junk. Clean up the yard in short order with Georgia Junk.